Are you ready? It's time for On the Double with the Double S Express. Great sports talk and big-time guests with Sean Wally and Sean Boyd. On the Double with the Double S Express.
Welcome to On the Double with the Double S Express, Sean Wally, alongside Sean Boyd. And I know that normally we're trying to figure out where in the world I might be, but Sean Boyd, I know now we don't know where the heck in the world you are.
Oh my goodness, man. Don Newsom, our engineer, you are a maestro, man. I don't know where in the world you got that song from, but that brings brings back some childhood memories. And where am I? That is the biggest question. Actually, Sean, we'll start out with you, man. My goodness, you are the globetrotter extraordinaire. Where might you be right now?
In Toulouse, France, which the great thing about that is we have reached southern France, which I've been told is the southern California of France. The weather completely changed. Sunshine, blue skies all day. Sun was out until almost 9 p.m. Just amazing weather.
Oh, man. Well, you know how I love California. The sunshine. And, of course, there were a few pictures you put out on Facebook that showed the nice beach. So, you know, I mean, help me out here with geography. The Atlantic Ocean connects France. Am I correct?
Yeah, that was a couple days ago when I was able to get to the southwest coast of France. And now we've gone about another 3 hours due south. So definitely more water pictures in our future.
Well, that's some good stuff, man. And, you know, of course, you know, handling things with the Harlem Globetrotters. Have the Generals gotten a victory yet?
Well, thankfully, no, because I would like to keep my job for a while.
So, wait, let me get this straight then. So if you win, then that just ends what we know as the Harlem Globetrotters today, and that just foils everything. So the Generals then go on to the NBA, and they just say, thanks, Sean, and, you know, we're moving on to greener, or what's the deal?
Well, I think the notoriety, 15 seconds of fame on ESPN, you know, it might be worth it if it's something that I decide I'm, you know, ready to move on to something else. It'd be awesome to get that second elusive victory that I can't seem to get here for the Generals.
Yes, so one victory seems to be enough for the Washington Generals, but fun and excitement all around. I mean, does it feel any different? I mean, so the fanfare in the United States, obviously the Harlem Globetrotters are loved tremendously. But are the fans different? Are they more rowdy overseas? Are they subdued? What is that temperament like in Europe?
Well, Sean, we kind of run into a lot of similarities where in smaller towns, they are somewhat subdued. Yet in larger venues, larger arenas, larger cities, The crowds sometimes do show up a little bit better. But these fans, man, they line up early. A lot of them are there before we even arrive to the arena, which is typically 2 hours before game time. Yet, you know, fans are lined up. They're taking pictures. They're hooting and hollering. And they're waving at us. It's definitely a fun thing to experience.
So with that being said, you know, you're coming to the end. How much longer do you have on the European tour?
Oh, goodness. We're not that close to an end. We've got more than a month left. It still seems like it's getting closer, but, man, still a month to go. We don't end Europe until May 11.
Now, this is something that our listeners might not know. There's more than one traveling show for the Harlem Globetrotters. I believe that there are three shows. Is that correct?
Correct.
Okay, so then when your season ends, is there a continuous season that's constantly going? So no matter what time of the year, the Harlem Globetrotters are actually playing in some way, shape, or form in a gym near you?
Well, there are still two U.S. tours that are currently going. Ours ended early to get over to Europe, and I believe they all end somewhere around the end of April, first week of May, and then there is a short break for people to, you know, get their bearings straight and get home for a while, and then some get to continue on to the Around the World tour, or there is a South American tour as a possibility as well.
Well, man, that is definitely some exciting stuff, some words of wisdom, some insight from Mr. Sean Wally. Now, Sean, you're mentioning the journeys of you and I geographically, you more so overseas, and you cover more ground. I take more of a local jaunt here and there, and so traveling just, you know, back and forth between California and the state of Washington, and of course, you know, handling some family business up there. For those of you who know, of course, you know, my father passed away February the 15th, and so it's been a tough time for the Boyd family, but at the same time, there's been some things that have to be taken care of, and so I'm doing that. Of course, I had the chance to spend Easter up in the Pacific Northwest with some family and friends, and so it was a great weekend, to say the least, you know, helping family out. And now back here in Northern California in Elk Grove. And so, yeah, you know, I'm taking some trips, Sean. You know, I'm not at that, you know, the big hobnob stage that you're at, but eventually we will definitely get there. And you know, of course, talking about family, let's go out to the Chandler Reach Winery's hotline and bring in, man, a great, great family member of mine, my cousin. I'm proud to introduce him here on the Double with the Double S Express, and that is none other than Leo Clark. Leo, how you doing today, man?
I'm doing well. How are you guys doing today?
Well, man, doing wonderful, wonderful. Of course, how was your Easter weekend?
Man, I spent my Easter chasing my kids around, watching them do these Easter egg hunts and eating way too much candy. So let's just say it was filled with sugar and filled with excitement.
Well, that, you know, that sounds like a lot of fun, minus the sugar, because with all that sugar, I'm sure you would have to lace them up real tight and make sure that you're stretching to keep up with the kids.
Oh, there's plenty of that. I've been chasing those energetic boys around. I have to be doing a lot of stretching at my young age of, I won't even call it out right now. Let's just say I got to do a lot of stretching to keep up with those young men.
Well, that's awesome stuff. I know that you love being around the kids and everything. And so, you know, it's a lot of fun. Let's talk a little bit about what you are doing nowadays. Of course, man, if I go onto YouTube or I check out Facebook or, you know, some of the other social networks, we will all be blessed enough to get a chance to see Leo TV. Now, tell our listeners a little bit about Leo TV and what that's about.
Absolutely. You know, a little while ago, I just decided to launch Leo J TV on YouTube is kind of as an outlet of some friends. We always talk sports, and they're always asking these questions about basketball or any other type of sports, and they see my passion. And one of my friends says, hey, won't you just start uploading some of this stuff on YouTube? And I was like, oh, man, I'll try that out. And it's been a great outlet for me. I mean, coming from my background of just growing up playing sports with my older brothers and growing up playing in high school and college, but having the opportunity to transition into the entertainment world. You know, I've been really acting out here in L.A. since 2003, and I've been fortunate to work on shows like, you know, Criminal Minds, CSI New York, Bones, recurring role on the soap opera General Hospital. So I've been fortunate in my career, especially in the commercial side. I mean, commercials has really blessed my family, able to have a nice down payment on a house and all that good stuff. So living out in L.A., you know the cost of that. But to move forward, I was really trying to figure out how could I marry my love for sports and my love for acting. And that's where Leo J TV was launched. You can find it on YouTube. I'm having a lot of fun. I talk about different topics from the Spurs to guys sitting out games in the NBA. I mean, you name it. Whenever I get a request or an idea that may pop in my head or something that's current, a current event I may touch on, and just really just sharing, you know, my opinion within that. Because at the end of the day, we all have opinions in sports. And there's always going to be disagreements, whatever it may be. But at the end of the day, I want to be able to share my passion about the game of basketball or boxing, whatever it may be, and hopefully people enjoy it.
Now, Leo, tell us a little bit about the transition. Of course, you'd mentioned being on such shows as Criminal Minds and General Hospital. Boy, I'm telling you, I'm sure some of our viewers out there are just saying, oh, my goodness, I didn't know. They're going to look you up right now, whether it's IMDb or whatever. They're going to try to figure out who you are. But tell us a little bit about that transition. How tough was it to make it to go from acting into your passion in sports?
Well, and the thing is, I think I'm still finding it out, to be honest with you. The reality is I still pursue acting not as much as I used to, and a lot of that's because of, you know, I had to really make a decision when my kids were born back to back to back, meaning that what was going to give, my time with them or me pursuing acting at the level I was at the beginning. And talking with my wife, I really chose my kids. So right now, pretty much all I do now really is episodes on General Hospital now. I don't actively audition like I was used to unless it's commercials. And I'm really kind of processing through that and really until my kids get a little bit older. Then I may jump back into it. But if Leo J TV really takes off on YouTube like I wanted to and wherever it leads, I mean, who knows? Because I'm actually having a lot of fun doing that because of the creative control and the process of learning being behind the camera, but also learning the production side and the editing side and all these different things that I'm learning is like, whoa, it's shedding some light on what I used to do as an actor, only being behind the camera. So it's been a rush. It's been a lot of fun. There's no question about that.
Now, Leo, in terms of your YouTube bits, your episodes, how long does each one take from your creative brainstorming thinking process to the time you're done with editing and ready to post?
Usually what I try to do is as I really kind of jot some notes down and try to develop a structure within how I want an episode to go. So there may be like, what do you call it, some not necessarily dialogue, but there may be some points that I want to hit in each particular video. And so what I would do is I would take basically notes the night before on something I want to cover, and I may do two episodes in one day, and I may have those set up and have those notes kind of put to the side. And then I go up and you know, in basically in my back office, and I shoot them. And once I shoot them, editing will take anywhere from just trying to get the best takes, understanding how that flows, and it usually takes probably about anywhere from 2 to 4 hours on an edit. And that's really kind of how I structure it. Sometimes I also get requests, from whether it's former NBA players, whether it's former overseas players, or whether it's fans out there that are really intrigued by the show. And I just take that And I just said, okay, let me go ahead and touch on this topic. And I just share basically my opinion and my point of view and try to bring a little bit of humor in it. And I think it's evolving and it's growing and different things that I will try within the show and see what works and what doesn't work.
With your various roles you've had in acting and being on TV shows, like you've mentioned, soap operas, evening dramas, what do you do confidence-wise to, have you ever had any issues, you know, seeing the big stars of daytime TV or the actors on Criminal Minds, the various shows you've mentioned, to where you say to yourself, hey, I belong with these people. I have a passion for this. I'm good at this. And yes, I can be on their level.
You know, and here's the thing. That's an excellent question, to be honest with you. You know, coming up as an actor, one of the things you're going to learn, there's some phenomenal actors in this world that are actually not even on TV. If you go watch some of the stage plays, whether it's in New York, whether it's even in San Francisco, wherever it may be, there's some phenomenal actors that will never see the light of day on TV or film. Does that make them a better actor or not? No, it doesn't. It's really understanding that the dynamic of auditioning. And I'll kind of break it down to some of, you know, you guys fans out there. To get even two or three lines on a primetime show, a lot of people don't understand the process that it takes just to get two or three lines on a primetime show. So what you have is you have your first audition. Okay, then you have what is called a callback. Then once you say you're in the callback, you're on hold, which will be on the show where they're checking your availability, quote unquote. Then they may have two or three actors that they're trying to choose from. And so, is this person too tall? Is this person, do we want a black guy? Do we want a white guy? Whatever it may be, they're trying to figure all that out within the parameters of that show. Then it has to be approved, once again, by the producers and the network. And then once they approve you, then you go and sometimes there's a table read. I mean, sometimes there's, you know, you got your days you're on set and you're going through all the rehearsals. And I've seen people get fired even there. So there's definitely a tough process as an actor. So you can be great at it. And I feel like I've worked hard as an actor, but I know there's so many more variables involved in the acting industry as opposed to what I'm doing now with Leo Day TV, because I really had to kind of have control over the things I want to put out there without having to answer to a network or hoping my agent can get me an audition or whatever it may be. It's a competitive business, and to give you an idea, only 3% of actors qualify for benefits. So you think about that. As how many people in LA, if you come to LA and you see all these people waiting tables, say, "Hey, I'm an actor." Well, most of the time, most people are actually not qualifying for benefits, and that's really the tough part of this industry. A lot of people are pursuing it, but not a lot of people are succeeding. I mean, you're talking like maybe 1%. Are really able to provide for their family on average.
Leo Clark of Leo J TV joining us here on the Double with the Double S Express. Now, Leo, let me ask you a question here. How tall are you?
6'2".
6'2". So yes. Then there it's so proven once again that I am the runt of the family. so there is. I just need to know, because I've always thought that actors are somewhat short. You know, there you see a lot of them between 5'6", 5'8". You know, maybe there's the person such as yourself that looks taller on the screen. Is that something that's reality as far as acting is concerned, or does height really play that big of a difference?
Well, I kind of give you that. I mean, once again, that's another excellent question. I mean, I know a lot of people are really curious about that. You have a wide range of height, but it really depends on who is the lead. So say you get a guy like Tom Cruise, who's, you know, right around 5'7 or 5'8". Okay. Now, if there's a guy that's, you know, maybe a co-star in it, they're not going to have him that tall, because here's a guy who's supposed to look strong and powerful on screen. If you have a guy that's 6'3" and he's kind of taking him down and beating him up, the reality of that kind of, people are like beginning to question it. But sometimes height can go against you. You know, I remember auditioning for a show. I won't even mention it, but I was literally right up to the base. It was like, "Hey, we literally like you." And then the question was asked, "How tall are you?" And I was like, "Wow, I've never been asked that." You know, even though it's on my resume, I was never asked that question. And as soon as I mention it, you can just see the look on their face like, oh, okay. And it comes to find out, you know, I had my agent kind of call. My agent was like, literally, I'm sorry. You know, Leo, the lead guy that you were going to have a kind of a wrestling fighting type scene with was too short. And for him to take you out, it would have looked weird. So they just decided to go with somebody a little bit shorter. So, yes, it can work against you, but sometimes it can work for you. It really just depends on the show, and that's the thing that within acting, there's so many variables, and that's the tough part of this business, that there is a lot of variables involved, that you can have a phenomenal actor, but he could be too tall, he could be too short, he could be too chubby, he could be too skinny. A lot of different things that are involved in that.
Definitely great pearls of wisdom to go by, especially for some of our listeners who aspire to be in acting. Of course, I want to shift gears a little bit, Leo, because there are two passions of yours as far as being a sports fan, one being basketball. Of course, you played at the collegiate level in basketball, but I want to have our listeners get a chance to talk with you about the sport of boxing and how close that is to our family. Of course, my cousin, you know, Henry Clark, boxed, you know, as a heavyweight boxer. And of course, you got a chance to see that firsthand. And of course, you and I have talked about some of the things that Henry had done in his lifetime as far as boxing is concerned. And you had mentioned George Foreman actually being really good friends with Cousin Henry.
Yeah, I mean, I tell you, that was one of those things that I didn't get a chance to know George growing up. But I remember when my dad passed away and I got the opportunity to talk to George after, I really reached out to him and he actually, you know, contacted me back, you know, and so it was kind of cool hearing from him, and the things that he said about my dad really, you know, were impactful to me. You know, growing up around the sport, I mean, I'm a huge boxing fan. I love the sport, and I'm kind of, finally, we get to see Manny and Floyd Mayweather fight. So there's definitely an excitement and an understanding of the boxing world and what it takes to be a major fighter. It runs in our blood. There's no question about it. Having a father who at in his peak was ranked fifth in the world at one time, you know, being a sparring partner of guys like George Foreman, but also fighting on the undercard of the fight when he fought Ali in Africa. So, and being around George and hearing the different stories of him getting to hang with George and the comedy that went on between those guys, those were huge. They even know that. And to know that my dad was well-respected in that era of boxing, which was considered really the golden era of boxing. When you look at the Ken Nortons, the Muhammad Ali's, the Joe Frazier's, I mean, even when you look at Sonny Liston and Ernie Shavers, you know, they were on the kind of like tail end of their career, you had an era of boxing among heavyweights that almost every fight was a knockdown, drag-out fight. It was battle. And that was a joy. Even though I was a younger kid, it was fun for me to kind of go back and reflect on that and to see that, you know, my dad was well-respected.
Leo, what do you recall learning from your dad about passion, about confidence, and about being great that you've been able to put forward in your life?
Man, you guys are putting up these great questions. I'm not even sure what to do right now. But anyway, seriously.
That's what we do on the double. That's what we do here on the double.
Hey, I love it. 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 And I hope your fans love it as well. I mean, you guys are doing a phenomenal job. And the key thing about that is, you know, my dad is like, you know, remove the word quit out of your vocabulary. And he's also, if you're going to do something, strive to be the best at it. You know, a lot of people say, hey, I want to try something. It's like, well, are you going to do it or are you just going to try? Because if you try it, that means you're giving yourself a way out to quit. And so when we would do something, it was like literally, I don't care if you're not that good at the beginning, because over time, you will improve. You know, I'll never forget being a high school basketball player, and at that time, I hadn't really grown. I was about 5'5", and I remember my high school coach saying, "You'll never play college basketball." And so I remember, you know, one of the things that my dad says, "Never. Don't let anybody tell you what you can and cannot do." And I just remember using that as fuel. So I would take these things that were negative or somebody would try to press upon you, and I would also take that drive that my dad had to always be great at, doesn't matter. I don't care if it, you're playing marbles with your friends back in the day. He's like, be great. Try to win. And I just try to apply that in life, but also do it with integrity and character. There's a lot of times you see people that want to attain something in life, but they're trying to step on somebody or over somebody to get there, as opposed to giving your all, giving that full effort, that full desire, but also bringing people along with you. You know, and I look at this man and the people that I surround myself with are usually encouragers. And I'll never forget my older brothers always encouraged me to push it. And I remember them getting the chance to see me playing in college and all that kind of stuff. And the smile on my oldest brother, who was Henry Jr., his face, you know, that was like, you know, that meant the world to me. But it was, one again, putting that time in the gym, putting that time into a craft and really striving to be the best. It's the same thing that I want to apply to Leo JTV. I know it's just the beginning, but my goal is, once again, to strive for it to be great where it is. It is talked about, not to bring any type of pride or anything like that, or say, look at me, but at the end of the day, I want to produce great content and I want to entertain people. And that's a matter of fact, period.
Great words of wisdom for not only the sports world, but life, from Leo Clark. And Leo, you talk boxing, and boxing is something that has been big in the past and is kind of in a bit of a lull right now. And we've had great guests in the past, Rich Murata down from Southern California, and George Foreman Jr. Now, what do you think it's going to take for boxing to get back towards its peak and be on another level yet again?
One of the things that, in my opinion, with that is guys are going to have to, the top guys are going to have to start fighting each other sooner. You know, don't get me wrong, Floyd and Manny are phenomenal boxers. But that fight should have happened about 6 or 7 years ago. And the reason why I say that is because both of them had a speed level that was absolutely ridiculous. You had an aggressive fighter like Manny and a counterpuncher like Floyd that had tremendous hand speed. Now, both of them still have speed, but it's nothing like it used to be. And you can tell that from their punch count per round has slowed down for both of them. But also you have a guy like Manny who has, you know, recently been knocked out, you know, by, you know, Juan Manuel Marquez. And then so he's also a more cautious fighter. So so when I talk about boxing as a whole, a lot of times guys are afraid to lose. And this is my personal opinion. Guys are afraid to lose because they feel like they're going to lose out on money if they lose, because, you know, you look at social media, it really just blows things up. So if a guy takes a loss, I mean, imagine Manny or Floyd taking a loss in this fight here. Social media is going to go crazy, whoever it is. Now, what is that fighter going to do? So if you look at a guy like Manny, if he wins, you think, you know, then Floyd's going to get an automatic rematch. But if Manny loses, you think Floyd's going to give him another fight? Probably not, because, you know, that is, end of the day, Floyd wants to control. So when you see that type of stuff, you see a fighter of Floyd's caliber, it's going to take him saying, you know what, I don't care. It's not about my record. It's about me striving to be the best, not just saying I'm the best. So that's been a thing as I watch boxing, is the guys are waiting too long to fight each other. And I think if you look at what MMA is doing, I mean, you have the top guys really fighting each other like left and right, and they fight real often. If we can get that back in boxing, I think boxing will take off again, because it's a sweet art, it's a sweet science. I mean, guys that are great at it, I mean, it's a joy to watch. And I think if you can add to that as well, it's we got to get some of these linebackers from the NFL who are getting all these concussions, you know, to choose boxing again, because that's what it was back then. I mean, the heavyweights of the day, those guys were basically linebackers, what they are now. And I think guys are saying, hey, we can make a little more money in football and walk out the arena with a prettier face. So they're probably sticking to football. That's where some of our top heavyweights are right now, playing in NFL.
Now, Leo, you just answered a question of mine, because my question was going to be, what would it take to actually get the heavyweight class back to the prominence and dominance that it once was.
There you go. Let's go hang out with the NFL players and let's get these guys back in the ring. Because that's really where the heavyweight class has been. And then you have the Klitschko brothers, who really refuse to fight in the United States. And so a lot of times, because of that, the heavyweight division is not as popular because the guys that are holding the belts are not even in the U.S. And they don't usually fight in the U.S. So it's really the heavyweight class has really lost its luster. And I would love to see that division. I mean, back, even if you go back to the Holyfield and Mike Tyson days, I would love to see that rise back up again. And you look at the Lennox Lewis's and, you know, all that kind of stuff. I mean, even those guys didn't fight each other really in their primes like they should have. There should have been way more fights between Tyson and Holyfield in their prime, as well as Lennox Lewis and Tyson and all that kind of stuff. But we need to get some of those guys from the NFL back in boxing.
Leo Clark joining us here on The Double. Now, Leo, I want to kind of hit a point close to home here. And, of course, we've been talking a little bit about your father, Henry Clark, my cousin, Henry, and some of the legacy that he has left. Of course, growing up here in the Sacramento area, he is a pioneer as far as boxing is concerned. And one of the things that you want to do is you want to reveal some things as far as his life is concerned. I believe you're talking about possibly writing a book. And I guess what I'm getting at is why hasn't he been inducted into the Boxing Hall of Fame or the Sacramento Boxing Hall of Fame thus far?
Well, you're touching on really a subject close to home. For him not to be in the Sacramento Boxing Hall of Fame, for basically being a California Golden Glove champion for multiple years, not just one, multiple years. And if you talk to guys like Tony the Tiger Lopez, I mean, you go back and you look at the Bill McMurray, who has actually been inducted to the Sacramento Boxing Hall of Fame. For Henry Clark to be in there is absolutely ridiculous. I mean, and I hate to say it, but it is. I'm not saying that because of my dad, but it's about where, once again, when he moved from Baton Rouge, Louisiana at 18 to come box out of California, he basically grew up in the sport of boxing in California as far as his years as a professional. So that's a touchy one. I mean, I know one of the things that I'm just trying to gather and research right now, talking to my dad's sisters, his brothers and stuff like that, I want to kind of see if I can possibly write a short film that can really honor him. So that's kind of one of those things that are in the works. I'm not sure when that's going to happen because I want to do it right. I don't want to just do it and say, oh yeah, I did something for my dad. I want to do it right, and that's why that's one of those things that we're in the process of doing. But it may take a little bit longer, and let you know as I'm gathering the information that I need to basically do my dad justice.
Now, Leo, we know you're a big basketball guy, and there's a big game going on right now, the NCAA Championship men's basketball. Wisconsin, a lead over Duke in the second half. What's your take on that game, and how's your bracket looking with the championship upon us?
Well, I'll tell you what, I know I shot a couple of friends when I picked Wisconsin to win it all. And I know when they were going up against Kentucky, some of my friends, I thought it was crazy. And I was even talking to Sean earlier today. And Sean Boyd, that is, and if I'm not mistaken, he went with Duke. I was saying, hey, I'm going with Wisconsin. And the reason why is really it comes down to experience. And I know the game is still going on, so I think that they're up by about three right now. But when you look at Kaminsky and you also look at Decker, the experience that these guys had from losing last year, but also just the way they play together as a team. You talk about the game of basketball, man. What makes it beautiful is when you see guys that trust each other. I mean, I was always a guy who trusted my teammates and wanted to make them better as well as them make me better. Because at the end of the day, it's a team sport. A lot of you thought, oh, it's me. Since the and one has come along, it's made it a one-on-one game. A lot of kids play for highlights. But kids miss there's a key thing that they miss in basketball. That ball handling is not just dribbling. Ball handling is actually knowing how to pass, knowing where to place the pass, understanding, you know, as you're coming off of pick and rolls, pocket passes, kickouts, all these different things that are involved in the game of basketball, sometimes it's missing because everybody's looking for the oohs and ahs and the Sports Center highlights. And I, don't get me wrong, I love seeing a nice highlight with somebody getting dunked on. But at the same time, watching a team like the San Antonio Spurs, if you look at how they've come along of late, I mean, it's been beautiful because a lot of people counted them out. Really, they count them out every year, saying they're too old and all this stuff. But one thing about Popovich, he's such a good leader that he's able to allow his bench early in the season to develop a level of confidence and a belief in themselves because he throws them out there as he's resting his stars. And that's a lot of times I'm really against players resting because I'm from the old school. I'm like, listen, you're getting paid a lot of money. People are paying a lot of money to see you. Please get out there and play. I mean, don't take a night off because your toenail hurts. But when you look at what Pop does, he does it a lot of times to develop his bench as opposed to other teams doing it because their stars are complaining about how many minutes they play. And so because of that, he has an environment and a culture among the San Antonio Spurs that's beautiful to watch. And to me, when I'm watching Wisconsin, I'm not saying they're San Antonio Spurs, but the way their coach develops a belief system among them to trust each other. Man, I picked them over. When I picked them over Kentucky, people were like, what? I was like, just watch. I said, because when a game gets tight, when you trust your teammates, good things happen. And if you look at what Kentucky did when the game got tight, it went more one-on-one, and they stopped trusting each other. And that was the reason why Kentucky lost against Wisconsin. It wasn't because Wisconsin has more talent or more NBA players. No, that's not the case. But it's much bigger than at the college level, the team environment when it comes to winning the national championships because it's one and done. And it comes down to trust. And so as I'm watching the game, kind of got it on the big screen on the side. I mean, hey, it looks like my boys are looking good right now. I don't want to call it just yet, but my bracket's looking real nice if Wisconsin pulls it out.
So with March Madness and the NCAA tournament being one of the, if not the greatest, playoff system in all of sports, what do you think the NCAA can do in other sports or even professional sports can learn from the tournament format?
Well, and that, I mean, I tell you what, in the NBA, I wouldn't want to see a one and done. Here's the reason why. Because there's so much strategy at the NBA level when you're scouting and you break it down tape. To beat somebody 4 out of 7 times, usually the cream rises to the top. If you had a lot of one and done, so to speak, like the NCAA in the NBA finals or in the NBA, I guess to say playoffs, what would happen is you would have a lot of teams that may get hot one night, and they may knock off a bunch of superstars. And the NBA, I don't think would allow that because at the end of the day, they have to sell tickets, they have to sell TV revenue to generate to pay the salaries of these players. But what I would like to see is a lot of these teams, and I don't know if it's necessarily restructuring or what, but we got to do something about some of these teams that are in the East that have losing records and make it to the playoffs. Because the reality of it is, if I watch Atlanta Hawks play against, say, the Miami Heat, I mean, we know the Miami Heat really don't have a chance this season. There's just too many injuries. And it won't necessarily be an exciting first-round matchup. But then you turn around and go to the West. I mean, if you have OKC against the Golden State Warriors, as long as Westbrook is on the court, it's going to be exciting because that guy is so full of energy. That game, he's going to single-handedly make the Golden State Warriors work. And so to kind of look at that, I think college football could really learn from March Madness. I'm not sure at the professional level it would from a basketball standpoint, but to me, the college football, if they can get a playoff system similar to March Madness, and I know it won't be 64 teams, but to me, you will really find out when the tournament type of setting that this year was a lot better, but I think they should expand it to about maybe 8 to 16 teams in that kind of playoff for college football. That would excite me for sure.
Leo Clark joining us here on the double, flexing his sports prowess like a heavyweight champion. Man, I'm telling you, you're putting it down, man. You are definitely putting it down. Now, the whole talk about changing the structure. I mean, gosh, this could go either way. And as you were mentioning with Wisconsin, you picked Wisconsin. To be honest with you, every year I pick Duke in my bracket. And, you know, I would probably say more often than not, they let me down because I just believe that Duke should come out and win every year. My bracket was screwed up early, no doubt. But, you know, Duke has given me, you know, some new hope. But right now, man, you are right, cousin. I mean, we're looking at Wisconsin just putting it down on Duke, 48-39 right now. And so, you know, let's talk about the two types of programs, what Wisconsin has and what Duke has. And the reason why I say that is you had talked about Coach Popovich and his way of coaching. These two coaches that are on the floor have a very similar style structure, wouldn't you say?
They do from a coaching standpoint and from a philosophy of team play. To me, the biggest difference is Wisconsin usually recruits players that stay for 2 to 3 years as opposed to Duke, because they're usually a perennial powerhouse. They usually recruit the guys that are one and done. And so, and that to me, once again, it comes down to the experience and the trust. I mean, to play with somebody just for a year and then to play with somebody for 4 years, that's kind of like the difference when you look at what the Miami Heat did when they first lost in the finals against the Dallas Mavericks. The Dallas Mavericks trusted each other. They had a guy like Jason Kidd leading the team as an assist guy, getting guys like Dirk, Jason Terry shooting some threes from everywhere. They had a trust system already in place. Then Dallas broke that team up because they didn't want to pay guys like Tyson Chandler and all that kind of stuff. But it's ironic that Tyson Chandler is back on that team. But Miami had to learn to trust each other. Then they came back the next year, and they finally won it. But you can kind of notice the writing on the wall with Miami the last season, that they didn't trust each other as much because it looked like D-Wade was hurt a lot this season. You can see the frustration kind of looking at you. You can just look at the guy's eyes. Well, we really don't have the same unity and the same bond. So when I go back to Wisconsin, you look at a team like that, man, they just look like they enjoy playing with each other because they've been doing it for so long. And Duke is still trying to figure that out. And so if these young fellas from Duke were to decide to come back, it would be scary. But the reality of it is they won't. And that's the difference between a program like Wisconsin and a program like Duke. You have one team that will recruit players that are usually going to stay because they're not the diaper dandies that Dick Vitale would say. They're usually guys that are solid, phenomenal players who develop into future NBA stars. Because with Kaminsky and Decker, those guys are definitely going in the first round. There's no question about it. They're too smart of basketball players not to go into the first round. The effect they will have in the NBA, I don't know. I'm definitely looking forward to watching.
Leo Clark with great insight. You're carrying the show, man. Thank you so much for your time, your insight. We kept you longer than most guests. We appreciate it. You can follow Leo on Twitter at Leo J Sports TV and subscribe to his YouTube channel as well.
Thank you, guys. I appreciate you guys having me. You guys are doing a phenomenal job, and I'm sure we will meet again on another show.
Most definitely, Leo, and thanks for being on the show, man. And we will. We're going to have you on again. And unlike what you were saying with Dukes and the Kentuckys with one and done, we know that you're going to be continuous, and they can catch you on Leo J TV. And I'm excited, and I'm going to be pumping that out full blast to all our people as well. So Godspeed to you, man. Cousin.
Thank you, man. Thank you for the support, man. You guys enjoy the rest of your evening.
There goes Leo Clark. Follow him again at Leo J Sports TV on Twitter.
Man, you know, we could have talked with Leo the whole time. We could have stretched the show to a 2-hour show. That probably would have put Don on pins and needles. But man, that's a great conversation that we were having there with Leo.
Absolutely. He's got a lot of insight on all kinds of things, from, you know, great things about life and acting to sports and many passions in his life that are going very well for him right now.
And yeah, I look forward to following him. And again, you know, for those of you who want to, you can go on Twitter to Leo J TV to check him out, or you can go on to Facebook and you can like that page. We're going to take a quick break, and when we return, for those of you who have been waiting to talk about this, we're going to talk about opening day.
What's my image?
What's my image?
At Images Barbershop and Styles, you get the best cut, the best design, and the best styles in the Sacramento area. Plus the affordable price, along with the fun, family-friendly atmosphere, you'll walk away with a look of satisfaction and the feeling of a new you. Do you have your image?
We have ours!
Images Barbershop and Styles, located at 10040 Bruceville Road, Elk Grove, California, Suite 140. For appointments, call 916-271-0218. That's Images Barbershop and Styles.
I'm Chris Walls, and I'm a truck driver from Missouri. For 13 hours a night, I sit in my truck and I drive. Out of boredom, I'll stop and eat. If I'm not doing fast food, I guarantee there's a bag of chips open on my dashboard. Along with that, I'm good for about 4 liters of soda a night. That was all until Andro 400. I started out 4 months ago weighing 341 pounds. And since taking Andro 400, I have dropped 45 pounds. I'm sleeping better. There's no cravings. There's no excessive thirst. My knee pains went away. I've had some lower back issues, and I've noticed that that went away. And I can only contribute that to Andro 400. One thing that Andro 400 said on the radio ad says it attacks belly fat. Well, let me tell you, it did. I've lost 6 inches. This product really does work.
So guys, if you'd like to experience similar results, then get Andro 400, the safe, natural, and inexpensive way to boost your testosterone. Go to Andro400.com. Andro400.com.
Who likes the inconvenience of car repairs? Not only do car repairs take time and money from you, but can you even trust your repair shop? Nate, Dave, and the team at Platinum Automotive Services in Tri-Cities, Washington are honest and trustworthy, and they take great care of your vehicle. From the basic oil change to full engine rebuilds, they do it all. Like the Platinum Automotive Services Facebook page for a shot at a free oil change. Platinum Automotive Services, platinum service without the platinum price.
Welcome back to On the Double with the Double S Express. Sean Wally and Sean Boy. Standing in the Hall of Fame. And the world's gonna know your name.
Cause you burn with the brush fade. Welcome back to On the Double with the Double S Express. Spanning the globe from France all the way to the 916 in California. Sean Wally with Sean Boyd, and man, Sean, Leo Clark carrying the show for us with his great insight. I looked at the time and think, man, show's almost over and we haven't even touched on opening day.
Whew, opening day, man. What can you say about it? I mean, this is one of the most nostalgic days in sports, period. And I don't care what sport it is. I mean, when you talk about opening day in Major League Baseball, it brings so much, you know, visions of grandeur. Your team getting a chance to take that next step to being in the Fall Classic, which is the World Series. Sean, I'm telling you, man, I got a chance to watch the Seattle Mariners today, and I know that it's game one of 162. So we can't jump out and get ourselves too excited about the season. But, of course, King Felix was on the mound. It was a great day in the Pacific Northwest, 51 degrees, 45,000 screaming people. It was just short of a sellout. I'm sure they'd probably say that it was a sellout. But the Seattle Mariners came out, and they played a strong baseball game from beginning to the end.
45,919 to be exact, but who's counting? And
And that's as far as I know, that's a sellout. And I think that's what Aaron Goldsmith said on the postgame show. But yeah, it was about as perfect of a baseball game as you can have it from the Mariner standpoint, outside of the Mike Trout home run off of King Felix. But Trout is an MVP, and he definitely owns Felix. He's one of the few guys that has Felix's number. He's hitting over 400 career against Felix. So you take that with a grain of salt, because after that, Felix slammed the door shut on the Angels.
Yeah, you mentioned Trout with that homer, a 408-foot shot, you know, and it was something to be seen. And, you know, it looked in the beginning that, you know, maybe it was going to be status quo, even though it almost looked like Austin Jackson had the ball in his glove. It just scaled over his mitt to go over the fence there, and that started it out 1-0. But one of the things that you and I were talking about on the break was, you know, Sam Smith. Who? Sam Smith. I mean, so the Mariners, here's what I believe the Mariners are going to be, this type of team this year that scores in droves. And once they get things going and once they get things clicking, it's a floodgate. So Smith triples the right in the third, and then Cano singled the center. Scoring Smith, and then all of a sudden, that's when the momentum rolled. The same thing happened in the fifth, you know, to where Ackley homered in the right, and then Sam Smith comes out again, and, you know, they get another insurance run, and that was your ball game. Because, of course, let's face it, Felix Hernandez was not going to, you know, let this game get by. And, of course, you know, my favorite buddy, you know who I'm talking about, Sean, to come in
Fernando.
And close. Yeah, well, Mr. Rodney, yeah, you know, I'm going to have to get past him, you know, in order to enjoy the season a little bit. But there's something about that little arrow that he points.
Did you and Logan Morrison figure out where the arrow landed?
You know, your guess is as good as mine. But, you know, if this continues, he's definitely going to be, you know, one of the top savers. He's going to lead the majors in saves if he continues this. But, yeah, I know it's, again, one game, but the Mariners looked tough in game number one. And that's all you can ask for in your opener.
And good things up and down the lineup for the Mariners, which is the one of the reasons a lot of people think Seattle will be there in the end and finally get back to the playoffs, is because they're upgraded on offense with the boomstick coming to Seattle, Nelson Cruz, who didn't do much today. But the good news is they still scored runs thanks to guys like Sam Smith. Austin Jackson had a couple hits. Brad Miller at the bottom of the lineup, a couple hits. So hitting is contagious. Confidence is contagious. And as you mentioned, Sean, you know, it just can happen very quickly once it gets started. Sometimes it can get on a roll, and that can be a good thing for any team, and definitely something the Mariners have missed in previous years.
You know, I think the Mariners, their biggest thing is, just like any other team, is to make sure that you stay healthy. But more importantly, the psychological effect that the Seattle Mariners batting roster presumes to a pitcher. As you'd mentioned, Robbie Cano, you know, he bats third, and then you've got Nelson Cruz as the DH. And then let's not forget, I mean, even though it's game number one, Kyle Seager, this guy has so much power and so much oomph. When you look at, you know, batters 3, 4, and 5 along with Morrison at the 6, you know, you're looking at the meat of the lineup, to where a pitcher cannot pitch, you know, they can try to pitch around, but at some point they're going to have to deliver a strike. And when they do, there's a good chance that ball might wind up out of the park.
And speaking of Morrison and home runs, he just about had one, but Mike Trout robbed him of a home run.
Yeah, you know, and again, we're talking about a Los Angeles Angels team that's still one of the better teams in the majors. And, you know, I took a look at one of those power rankings. You know, of course, there's always power rankings that come out with major league teams. And the Los Angeles Angels are right up there you know, in the top 10 in the majors as far as a, you know, a power ranking. But what was more shocking was to see the Seattle Mariners in this preseason power ranking at number 3. That says a lot about the Seattle Mariners. Of course, they closed very hard last year trying to make the playoffs and came up just short to my Oakland A's. And, you know, this year it's going to be one of those dogfights again in the AL West between the Seattle Mariners, Oakland A's, and the Los Angeles Angels. And so I'm looking forward to it, man. I'm looking forward to, you know, all three of these teams. If they can stay healthy, that it should be a strong race.
Sean, what's your take on pressure? Is pressure a good thing? Can that – I think pressure can bring one of two things. It can bring out the best in you, or you can fall to that pressure. And if you look nationally, the cheek pick in the MLB right now is the Seattle Mariners. And you've got a lot of national so-called experts, pundits, picking the Mariners to not only win the American League West, but the entire American League. You've got ESPN saying the Mariners and the Pirates will be in the World Series. You've got Sports Illustrated picking the Mariners to go far. And it's something that hasn't happened in many, many years since 2001. The Mariners made the last time in the playoffs. But to actually have all this notoriety, is it just because, heck, you mentioned they were close to the playoffs last season, and they bring in a guy like Nelson Cruz, the Major League Baseball home run leader from 2014. One guy, does he make that big of a difference to propel its team to the playoffs and beyond?
Well, you know, when you're talking about pressure with in Major League Baseball, I don't think that it plays as big of a role as it would in the NBA or in the NFL. The reason why pressure plays a bigger role in the NFL would be because it's a shorter season. You have 16 games that you're playing. There's a very small margin for error. And, you know, you can lose two games in the NFL, and that could pretty much put you out of the race. In Major League Baseball, it's a little bit different. You have so many players, so many different caveats, and so many different variables to make a complete team, that if you do have injuries, you can just go to your farm system or you can go to your bench. And if your team is deep enough, then you can withstand that. That's one of the things that I really like about the Oakland A's, is that they have always been resilient as far as injuries are concerned. You've got Coco Crisp starting on the DL at the beginning of the season. You just plug somebody else right in there and the beat goes on. For the Seattle Mariners, and actually I won't just say for the Seattle Mariners, I would say for any major league team, what you want is you want the notoriety to begin with, because that gives you legitimacy. So many years that, you know, teams come in and they go, oh my goodness, we're about to embark on this long season. And who are we? What type of a team are we? Are we a hitting team? Are we a pitching team? Do we have the bullpen that we need to survive? And to get notoriety at the beginning of the year is vindication for a team. So for the Seattle Mariners to have this type of notoriety in the beginning, it's just going to be fuel for them to show and to prove everybody, you know, as far as the prognosticators are concerned and as far as the media is concerned, that you picked the right team. And I think that they're going to rise to the occasion and do just that. They're going to have an excellent team, an excellent season.
And part of the reason I asked that is because in doing some prep for the show, I was listening to 710 ESPN Seattle, Brock and Salk from this morning, who were live from Safeco Field. And Mike Salk asked the question. He put it out there on Twitter and talked about it on the air. It's like, with all this notoriety and pressure, are you psyched as a Mariner fan or are you scared? And I thought it was almost a ridiculous question, because there's no reason to be scared. The Mariners they've been an afterthought for more than a decade. Who's given a crap about them? Let's be honest. Outside of diehard fans like myself, like you used to be, and, you know, all of the all of the faithful that have season tickets and people that go to the games or watch every game or listen to every game on the radio, and people that can recite Dave Niehaus from back in the day, to think that people would be scared of, oh, hey, we're supposed to be good finally, and actually are good and actually have depth and have pitching that compares to anybody's roster and have an offense that actually puts fear in people is a phenomenal thing. And hey, bring it on.
Yeah, you know, I think that that is contagious throughout the whole organization, and that includes the broadcasters as well. I got to say, you know, I'm sitting there watching the game and listening to Dave Sims and Mike Blowers. You know, there was kind of a feel that it's a different time around. You know, every play, every hit, everything that was done today was done with a little bit more energy. And it was a breath of fresh air to listen to Dave Sims and Mike Blowers go back and forth and just, you know, give that knowledge and that wisdom and keep the level of intensity going in their talk. And so, of course, they had Joey Cora on as a guest, you know, and you know, for those of you who know Joey Cora, one of the Mariner greats in the late 90s and 2000s, you know, playing the infield, second base. And, you know, he was always a Mariners favorite. Of course, he's living in the Miami area right now, but, you know, had, you know, got the chance to come up to Seattle and, you know, see opening day. And those are the types of things that fans can feel, that, you know, anybody who follows the Seattle Mariners, such as yourself, knows that it's a different day and time for this team. And, you know, you're just going to ride this one out and enjoy the season and see how it goes.
And they finally have depth. And that's something that, you know, like your A's have done great with their farm system and even the backup players on the bench. You know, it's not just Billy has been whoever it might be, we're just going to throw him out there and he'll do a serviceable job. No, it's actual guys that can play and can actually hit the ball and have a decent speed and decent glove on defense. So, and we talked about it last week with, or a few weeks ago with Chris Egan, talking about how the Tacoma Rainiers are supposed to be an awesome team because of the depth in the Mariner system, and the draft picks are finally coming through and playing good, and guys that they've signed throughout the last couple of years are hopefully about to turn the corner. So, you know, we'll see. We'll see how it all plays out.
And yeah, and speaking of those mighty A's, you know, and the job that Billy Bean does, and to give you an example, I talked about Coco Crisp being injured on the DL for the beginning of the season. Well, they move Fold to center field, and they bring in a young man by the name of Ben Zobrist. He is an actual second baseman that they changed to put out in left field. So this kind of gives you the idea on who Billy Bean is and how he can move players around and what a great job that Bob Melvin does. Zobrist comes in the first inning and smacks a two-run shot. And all of a sudden in the fourth, they're up 2-0 on Texas. And, you know, I can only imagine in Oakland, everybody's looking and saying, who is this guy? Hey, we're going to be okay because now we have this great player that we knew nothing about that just smacked a two-run shot. Now we're going to wait for, you know, the big dogs to come in and hammer it down. And so, you know, that's baseball. You know, and I believe that the Mariners have done a great job in putting together some of those pieces. And as you're saying, we'll see. We'll see what kind of depth the Mariners have, because there will be nicks and dings. But, yeah, I'm excited. I'm excited about it. You know, excited about, you know, seeing baseball, you know, in the beginning of the year here.
And having opening day and baseball back, not only does it give your team and your fans a chance to believe they have a shot, and it's also, it has so much more meaning because it means warmth is around the corner. It means spring is here. It means summer's not too far away. And for those that prefer the sunshine and vacations and Memorial Day and Labor Day and just having a great time at the ballpark, opening day means so many things. It's much more than just a game.
Yeah, well, you know, this time of the season is a little bit different, you know, as far as understanding that, you know, spring is here and the warmth is right around the corner. Man, it was still a cool day in Seattle. Started out raining. As a matter of fact, in eastern Washington, I believe there were 2 inches of snow for spring football at Eastern Washington University. And so Spokane got a little bit of snow as well. And even down here in Northern California, when I touched down this morning, it was man, it was about 38 degrees, you know, as I stepped out of the airport. And so, yeah, I know that it's going to be warm, and that's what baseball means, and the thick blades of grass. And, you know, as the saying goes, baseball and hot dogs and good old American apple pie, that's what baseball means to, you know, everybody. And, again, it's an exciting time of the year.
American pastimes. You just named a handful of them, and definitely going to be interesting to see how the Major League Baseball season unfolds. Just one game in, the Seattle Mariners 1-0, the Oakland Athletics hoping to get there. They're up 2-0 right now, and we'll see if they can hang on and be right up there top of the standings with the Mariners.
You know, when we started our show this time last year, and of course, you know, Oakland started out with this great start, and of course, Mariners were doing okay as well. You know, that was one of the things that I was saying. I was like, oh my God, it's just the beginning of the season, man. It's the beginning of the season. Let's see this thing unfold. But I'm more excited this year just for the huge question mark of what if. You know, I believe that there are going to be some new teams that are going to wind up rising to the top. And that's always good for sports. That's always good for baseball. And I see the Seattle Mariners being one of those teams.
Well, Sean, it's been what I believe is a great show. Hopefully the listeners do as well. As Leo Clark joined us, host of Leo J Sports TV on YouTube. And you can follow him there on Twitter as well.
You know, I have so many talented cousins and relatives, you know, and of course getting a chance to talk with Leo and just understanding who he is as a person, what he likes to do and what his passion is. Man, I bet a lot of people didn't know about the whole General Hospital and acting thing, and now he's parlayed that into sports, and so, you know, I look forward to seeing some great things from him and hearing of some great things from him in the near future.
Yeah, he's definitely doing great things, and he had a lot of words of wisdom it really hits home for anything you want to do, sports, whether it's acting, whether it's just be great at whatever you are passionate about.
Yeah, you know, and you know, one of the things that I took away from it was just how he was taught to be the, you know, just if you're going to do something, you know, be the best at it, you know, and isn't that the way it's supposed to be in competition? You know, nobody runs a race to come in second place. So when you set out to do something, be great at it, and be the best at it. And that's what his dad had taught him. And, you know, I had the privilege to get a chance to watch my cousin, you know, box. You know, I watched him against George Foreman in a sparring match here in Sacramento. And so I just know, you know, what a great person he was and what he's done for boxing, which is why I asked that question to Leo as far as Hall of Fame status is concerned. I believe at some point old Cousin Henry is going to be in the Hall of Fame here soon.
Well, heck, let's start making phone calls, sending emails, and make a push to make that happen.
Yeah, I mean, you're right, Sean. We've had the guest on the show. I mean, George Foreman Jr. and, you know, the commissioner of the Boxing Hall of Fame. I mean, yeah, we gotta do something about this, man. Let's use our platform to make sure. As a matter of fact, for if you guys want to see Cousin Henry Clark making it into the Boxing Hall of Fame, shoot us an email. My goodness, at Sean@double-s-express.com. That's SEAN. And or you can send it to Sean Wally at SHAWN-double-s-express.com. Give us your thoughts. Show number 97, Sean. They can You know, this has been a great show. If they want to catch us in the archives, man, where can they find us?
Oh, all over the web. Our BBS Radio page, bbsradio.com/DSX, has every single show. If you want to go back to the beginning, you can. If you want to check out last week's show, you can. So that's a good place to go. You hit up our website, double-s-express.com, as well as look us up on iTunes if you are an Apple iPhone or iMac user, and then Stitcher Radio as well.
Awesome stuff, man. Show number 97 in the books, man. And, you know, I would like to say a good day to all of our listeners. But for you, Sean Wally, good morning, my friend. It's been a great one, man.
That's right. 5:11 in the morning in France, man.
Well, man, well, keep doing what you do, man. And, you know, I'm definitely proud of you, and our listeners are as well. As they constantly, you know, let us know the great things that are going on. And, of course, you're doing an awesome service and entertainment, man.
Thank you, sir. Thank you, sir. It's a lot of fun. It's a grind, definitely, a lot of travel. But at the end of the day, it's something to be proud of, have a smile about, and it's a lot of fun.
Oh, man, show number 97 in the books, man. And, I laughed at the beginning when our theme was played and they played that little Carmen Sandiego jingle. But, man, I think it would only be fitting to go out to that one, man. And, Don, if you have that one, you can pull that one up. Show number 97 in the books for Sean Wally in France, Sean Boyd in Northern California, Don Newsom, the engineer. You've been listening to On the Double with the Double S Express. We'll see you next week.
1, 2, 3. Yeah.
Well, she sneaks around the world from Vegas to Carolina. She's a sticky finger filter from Berlin down to Belize. She'll take you for a ride on the boat to China. Now beware. The world is
Carmen Sandiego.
There's only